Done. Okay, I think we can start. Again, thank you all for coming. It's very customary to say it's a great pleasure to be hosting this panel today, but it's indeed a very, very great pleasure. Those who know me know that I have my kind of origins from the Green Movement in Greece in a previous life. So it is really also very personally a very great honor and a happy moment to be hosting today a panel on the green politics in Greece. But it's not just the personal aspect, obviously, or the emotional aspect of it. I think we have actually a real puzzle in front of us in a country which has experienced a lot of political fragmentation after the crisis, a country which is exposed a lot to climate change, potentially very much affected by natural disasters and so forth, a country where people are political and they deliberate a lot, and a country where we have quite a strong or a very active green movement for decades now. How is it that in a period where in other places, including in this country, the green movement is actually doing quite well, taking off, when even the European Commission talks about the green transition, has a Green Deal, and everybody's much more environmentally conscientious and so forth, how is it that the green political movement in Greece has not gained currency, had some successes, but mostly difficulties, failures, and so forth? So among the questions that I asked our panelists today when we were preparing for this event was, is there something wrong with the Greek DNA? If you're Greek, you cannot be green. Is there something exceptional about Greeks? As we know, the Greek exceptionalism in the political science literature. Is there something in the political, the regime of political competition? Is there something about the particular political space that has the problems? So these are all questions that I think are worth examining. And it's a really great pleasure to have some very, very excellent speakers to talk to us on this topic today. I will now consult my notes a bit more and introduce the speakers in the order that I will invite them to speak. Our first speaker will be Yannis Paraskevopoulos, who is a historical member of the Green Movement in Greece. He's a founding member and former co-spokesperson of Ekologi Prasini, the College of Greens. And he has worked closely with office-holding party members, Ms. Andrea Vaki, the MP in the early 90s, with Michalis Tremopoulos in the early 2010s as a member of the European Parliament. And he also was part of the co-founding the Prasini, which is one of the other green parties in Greece. You will hear there's quite a few of them. Immediately to my left, our second speaker is Iosif Potezaias, who is professor in the Department of Environment at the University of the Aegean. Iosif has written extensively on the green, and was just saying, not only on the green political spectrum in Greece, but one of his first studies were about the Ecologia Enalakticae, the Federation of Ecologist Alternatives in Greece, the first Green Party, 1989-1992. Which is published in a 2011 book by Iosif. And since then, he has followed, of course, the movement, I think, both academically and also extra-academically, extracurricularly. Our third speaker, we will move online, and we will have Theodora Nantzou, who is head of policy at the WWF in Greece and chair of the strategy board of WWF on European, in the, of its European policy office. Theodota has been active in the third sector in environmental issues for many, many years. I noticed she has a master's degree in environmental ethics, and I like that, not just environmental policy, but actually the ethics surrounding environmental issues. And she's worked, obviously, on issues relating to climate change, environmental conservation, sustainable development governance, and so forth. And last but not least, our last speaker is Petros Kokkalis, who is secretary of the party Cosmos. And former member of the European Parliament, where he got elected with the Progressive Alliance of Syriza, but then joined the Greens, the EFA group in the European Parliament. He's worked in different committees, in the Committee of the Environment, Public Health and Food Safety in the European Parliament, and previously has been vice mayor of Piraeus. And I think more in his professional capacity, he's also, among others, co-founder of the organization Earth, an environmental education NGO, and Aiforia, an incubator for green and blue economy startups. Jointly, I think our speakers cover a big spectrum, but also a very much kind of historical depth of the green political movement or space in Greece. So I will now stay quiet and pass the floor to Yannis Paraskevopoulos, who I think he will tell us more about the history, where the space comes, how it's defined, and how it came to where it has come today.
Good evening. Is it okay with sound? Well, a lot of history from inside. First, personal observation. Green parties don't come in a vacuum. They have emerged in two distinct waves. The first one in the 80s, based on post-1968 movements. The second one around 2000, based on post-materialistic values. Greece was lucky enough to have a share in both waves. First wave, Ecologia Enalaktiki, a short-lived project from 1989 to 1992, and then established in 2002, Ekologi Prasini, remained relevant for more than 10 to 15 years. The starting point for the Green Movement in Greece was a mini 1968 in Greece. The first ever Greek campus occupation movement, opposed by both a conservative government, but also by the established leftist parties as well. This movement sparked a series of so-called new movements, including about ecology, especially about air pollution. Nephos is the Greek word, the Athens smog. This same period was marked by the start of the West German Greens. They provided an inspiration, an international reference point, even links to Greek precursors, especially a short-lived anti-nuclear campaign in the 70s, because the Greek plan for the nuclear power plant was shelved very early. Then the critical junctions, the turning points. Late 80s, there have been several years of green movements, and there was a growing sense of belonging, of common belonging. This started the process for a federation on a national scale. Before the federation could be founded, there was an ad hoc list for the European election, bypassing all active groups. It received a bit more than 1% and catalyzed and hurried unification. A federation was established under the list brand. It was Ekologi Enalaktiki. Just 2 months later, a Green Member of Parliament was elected in the Hague Parliament. That brought a huge publicity wave, but were completely unprepared to capitalize on both. Weakened and introvert, with a lot of internal power struggle, it fell apart just 3 years later amid conflicts over nationalism, which was a very hot issue these years. You know about the name of Macedonia and so on. Next important year was 2000. We had a very strong constitutional protection of environment. It's called Arthro 24, Article 24. This one was targeted by both socialists and conservatives in a constitutional revision project. This sparked a strong backlash and a renewed demand for a Green Party. 2 years later, were born Ekologi Prasini, Ecologist Greens. But 5 years later, there was a series of forest mega fires, the first ever in Greece, with huge support and visibility to Ekologi Prasini, culminating in having an MEP, a member of the European Parliament, elected 2 years later. Then came the Greek crisis. He managed to navigate the first 2 years successfully. We even established a presence in more regional councils for the first time. We did narrow miss the election in the national parliament 2 years later. But just after a month, there was a run-up election, there was a voter collapse, and then we were trapped in internal power struggle. This ended in 2015 by entering the Syriza election list. This way, just entered another list as a satellite party, and never managed to recover ever since. About the fault lines now. The first set of them was clearly resolved by the mid-90s on whether to participate in election or not, on whether to be Greens, alternatives, or both, on being non-nationalist or even anti-nationalist or ethnocentricist, nationalist, or maintaining a federation of distinct groups and movements, or going on to conventional party structure. Next stop was in 1991, the NATO bombings on Yugoslavia, which were very fiercely condemned by a huge majority in Greece. Nevertheless, it was supported by a series of Green parties, especially French and German. And this created a bad image, a negative image. This support epitomized for us Greens, Greek Greens, all Green compromises while in government, especially in Germany. Some years later, when Ekologi Prasini started, we had a convergence and a near consensus for three main points. The socialist government, which had tried to overturn the constitutional protection of the environment and have a very negative record on sustainability issues as well, was a foil. Second, were part of the anti-globalization movement. That means we were challenging the rules and the consensus, the dominant consensus. Third, after the 1991 experience with Yugoslavia, we're rejecting any repetition of this. Of course, there were founding members that dissented. As it grew, there were emerging competing strategies implicitly. This is very, very important. The first strategy was being beyond the left and not systemic, somehow like current UK Greens. A second strategy was to be open to a strategic partnership with parts of the left, especially more moderate one, ananeotiki, renewal left, part of the conservative part of the former Eurocommunists, even hinting about potential election alliances, just hinting. third parallel strategy was to make openings to the political center and to socially, as you called, liberal audiences. Remote inspiration from Fischer's term in the 19th German Greens. These strategies were never debated openly and integrated.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Another fault line missed, overcome, bridged was about the austerity measures. We managed to have unanimous resolutions for the first 2 years, which just collapsed after an electoral defeat. Last four lines inside the Syriza list then was whether to focus on being good government official or just loyal ones to Syriza. This was a total failure. Behind limited electoral success, there were two kinds of two main factors: internal weaknesses, a culture of celebrating personal initiative, independence, self-sufficiency of activists, which led to them being less accountable to the rest of us and undermining trust. A parallel participation both in central politics and the civic society or local politics, which have different sets of rules, blurred, unaware of these differences. And all this led to passing under the bar. But additionally, there were very challenging situations. What's happening with you?
What's the application? So it's stuck. Hello.
Your first attempt to have to navigate an almost hung parliament from a king-making role. In our culmination in 2009, we have a polling dynamics up to 10%, but we're unable to coordinate to counter high-profile nationalistic conservative attacks. In May 2012, we had a fragmented political landscape and previous strategies to attract voters from other parties backfired when they've got parties of their own.
And can we wrap it up in
In
the
the run-up, we failed to recognize that it was all about government strategy and they didn't have a green strategy about it. And in the 2019, just after following the European Green Waves, we failed to present any autonomous green list due to to the main people supporting Syriza again. And then last year in the European election, we failed to attach any meaningful green visibility to Cosmos. There is, as a conclusion, us being inadequate and passing under the bar, but both the Greek society having a very weak civic society, unable to retrofit a Green Party. That's it.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you, Yanni, and thank you for your time. I'm hoping we're going to discuss with Ms. Nansu, the civic society, but I will pass the floor to Yosif Bodetsagias, who is going to talk definitely more about the political fragmentation, but the electoral organization.
And failed to have synergies with the civic society.
Yes, but I'm keeping this that ο χώρος, the space never debated openly and integrally essentially the political orientation, the political identity of where exactly it is in the
The
left-right
strategies.
spectrum and the strategies, yes. But Yosif, you've studied actually the opinions of the voters, green and non-green voters, and how they affiliate with the parties. So pass the floor to you. And I think we also have a PowerPoint.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Thanks very much for the invitation. It brings back memories of my childhood, academic childhood, because my PhD 30 years ago started with a very similar question: why is there not a strong green movement in Greece? And 30 years down the road, I still haven't found an answer, and I'm not going to pretend that I have an answer, but I have some ideas. Just picking up from where Yanis, halfway of Yanis' account, of the re-emergence of the Greek Greens in the early 2000s, if someone follows the electoral fortunes of the Greek Greens over the past 20 years, they have fought more or less 15 elections, and I'm counting all the different Green parties. And the simple rule is that every time they failed dismally, getting around 1% of the vote. And keep in mind that in Greece, you have a 3% threshold to gain parliamentary representation, so there was a far miss. There are two notable exceptions. One, in 2009, when first in the European Parliament election of June 2009, the Greens got 3.5% of the vote and they elected the first ever Green MEP. And then a few months down the road, we had an early parliamentary election and they did pretty well, 2.53, missing the 3% threshold, but it was a very close call. And then 3 years down the road in 2012, we had national elections in May, 2.9, just missing parliamentary representation, and a crushing collapse just 1 month later on the second election because there wasn't it wasn't possible to form a government when the 2.9 vanished and turned into 0.9. So why the trend and why the two peaks? And my understanding, it all has to do with the character both of the Greek electorate, but also of the Greek Green parties that have presented themselves to the Greek voters asking for their confidence. So where should I hear? So certainly, I think there is a big question and a big part of the unsuccess, explaining the unsuccess of the Greek Greens, is that you have a party that it's really at odds with the electorate. You have a party that its membership is very similar to what we know from Western Europe. They are left libertarian, they are post-materialists, they are pro-immigrants, they are pro-EU. Well, not all Greens are pro-EU, but okay. They are anti-violence. They have all these nice post-material left libertarian ideas. The only problem is that throughout the period, these concerns were very nicely accommodated by other left libertarian parties. And I'm referring primarily to Synaspismos and then to its development into Syriza. It's not that Synaspismos or Syriza was a big party or a very powerful party, but consistently it got 3 or 5% of the vote and it made it into the parliament. So from a left libertarian voter perspective, and actually Synaspismos was means the coalition of the left, the movements, and of ecology. So for me, being a left libertarian voter, I would certainly more likely cast my vote to Syriza, who had a standing chance of making it to the parliament, than to a nebulous green party. The other point, the other factor that played an event, pl sorry, played a role and explains, in my understanding, the two peaks are the turmoil and the collapse of the Greek political system between those 2 years, 2009 and 2012. If you have followed Greek politics, you know that it was a terrible period, starting with riots over the murder of a teenage boy in Athens in December 2008, Alexis Grigoropoulos, when the capital of Athens turned into a battle zone, proving the government incapable or unwilling to intervene. Then we had one of many, or yet another, Greek economic scandals. Really tainting the conservative government image, moving into the Greek debt crisis, and then, which meant that the mainstream parties simply vanished from the political front stage, and we have the rise of any kind of fringe parties. We have the rise of the extreme right. We have the rise of the extreme left, and in my reading of the situation, we also have the rise of the Greens. So basically, these two high points, in my reading of the facts, are simply a case of a protest vote. And it's not just my thinking, but I think that the available data proves the point. Here, for example, we have an analysis of the Green vote in the 2009 parliamentary election, which was one of the high points of Greeks. And okay, it's two statistics, but too small print. But basically, the Greek voter of 2009 was someone that would simply say that, okay, I care about the environment and that every single party, the Greens included, are no good. So clearly, a protest. An apolitical, you prefer, vote with an environmental concern. Okay, that does not sustain a political party. And that's also the case if we look at the 2014 elections, where the only statistically significant factor predicting the Greek vote is the economic hardship. And actually, people that were experiencing economic hardships were less likely to vote for the Greens. So they didn't even manage to capitalize this initial protest vote of 2009. In 2014, the disillusioned, the voter having no hope would vote for any other party but the Greens. And that explains the withering of their percentage. Last but not least, I also think that the share of responsibility for the poor showing, the poor electoral showing of the Greens, lies to the protagonists themselves. Here you can see the different parties that have been active or have been presented themselves as Greens in the Greek electorate over the past 20 years. Too many, too much factionalism, too much debate. Not enough esprit de corps or willingness to put aside minor, well, minor differences, or if you prefer, in more political terms, lacking the capability to see the logic of electoral competition to go back to Green Party theory, and too much emphasis on the logic of representation, on principles, on high principles, which of course are important and they should be involved and they should play a role in politics, but at the election, at the ballot box, they don't really make a difference. So that's all for me. Okay.
Thanks, Joshua. I'll keep my notes. I'll ask you a few questions later. We have in the panel, of course, one of the late coming protagonists on the last slide. I have to confess, I also spoke with one of the kind of earlier coming protagonists privately with Michalis Stamopoulos, and I'll pass on some thoughts that came out from this conversation and later on the discussion in the panel. But before all that, let me invite Theodota Nansou to give her presentation. And I had asked her to tell us also a bit more about this, you know, the consciousness of the Greek voter, the Greek citizen about environmental issues and how much there is also this demand for or attention to environmental issues, as well as concerns about climate change, but also your neighborhood and so forth. So how much energized and conscientious is the Greek citizen on these things? Theodota, you can start with your presentation.
Thank you, Vasily. Thank you for the presentation. Good evening, everybody. This is a very intriguing question about public attitudes in a country like Greece, a country that is a mess. I mean, people would think that in a country that is so full of garbage everywhere, biodiversity concerns, no protected areas. So much energy coming from fossil fuels that people actually don't care. But is that really the case with people in Greece? I don't know if you can see my presentation. I think you can. I like data. And I like to put them together, and I love to read surveys because knowing what the public, whatever public means, knowing what the public in Greece think and people think is not very easy. One of the reasons is that people express themselves mainly on social media. Other than voting every 4 years, there are not many officially valid ways of people expressing their their opinions, their frustration, their concerns. This is a slide. This is data from the Global Climate Change Survey. It is a global survey, as its title states, and has taken place in I think 120 countries all over the world for 2 years, and has some very interesting questions, which show some very interesting data for Greece. This slide shows the results of the survey for the European Union. The green line is a very tricky question because, most surveys just ask people, do you care about the environment? Are you concerned about the environment? Do you think that climate change impacts your simple questions? A question that actually shows how much people are actually concerned and are willing to give in order for crises like the climate crisis to be solved is this one. How much would you be willing to share? Would you be willing to contribute 1% of your income? That's real money. If somebody could promise that the climate crisis would be solved like forever. In the European Union countries, Greeks replied a very clear yes by 78%. This is a very high number. The red line is, I think, more interesting. What is the percentage that you think actually reflects your country's, the reply of the people of Greece to the same question? This is very low. This is below 40. And Greece has one of the largest gaps of, say, awareness of other peoples within Greece, other citizens' real concern about the environment. I think that this is interesting because it also shows a not just a general lack of awareness, but it leads us to understand that there are no official forms of expression of citizens' opinions and attitudes apart from voting every 4 years. Same survey. Are governments doing enough? No. That is a very clear no. Again, in the case of Greece, one of the highest percentages in the European Union. And I mean, that is obvious. People would always state this as obvious. The Greek government needs to do more about climate change. So there is a lack of confidence that official policies by the Greek, all Greek governments. This survey took place in between 2001 and 2021 and 2023. And the results were published in Springer Nature just last year. Another survey, Eurobarometer. This is very recent. This is February 2025. Greece, tackling climate change should be a priority to improve public health and quality of life. The highest, top, and Greece always ranks top in most of the environmentally oriented surveys, both in Eurobarometer and other surveys that compare at least countries of the European Union. So people do think, actually, they really think that climate change is a real issue. So don't listen to doubts, climate denials, denialists, all these myths about fossil fuels or whatever. The majority of the Greek public thinks that climate change is real. It is caused by human activity, and the policies that are taken up by the Greek government are not enough. Now, why do we see this situation, and why do we think that people actually don't care? I think it all boils down to trust or lack of trust. And another, say, element that comes up from surveys is that Greeks also top the list of lack of trust in institutions, primarily lack of trust to the Greek government, the Greek political system, justice, and the institutions of public participation. And that makes absolute sense. I mean, look at the public consultations. It's just that there is no other way for Greeks to participate in decision making other than these botched public consultations where you don't know what happens to your comments, nobody replies, and eventually just the big lobbies win. This slide is OECD survey, OECD data. It says clearly that Greeks, you can see the red line, Greeks have the lowest in confidence that the Greek government or the public administration system can save people's lives from a disaster, any disaster. It's not just climate disaster. This shows very clearly lack of trust. A final slide, which is also Eurobarometer. The majority of Europeans still consider corruption widespread. We know that. Greece tops the list. Greece always tops the list in concerns and lack of trust and confidence in the political system, the justice system, the public administration. So I don't think my proposition is that Greeks are deeply concerned, and this is the experience that we have as NGOs, really frustrated. They don't know who to vote. They don't trust any of the parties that are out there. And maybe they would be willing to applaud any party that would do its job in terms of, actually contributing to the protection of the environment, to solving the problem of waste, to advancing renewable energy and ending fossil fuels. All this is experience from our daily interaction with members of our own organization or the public out there. So it all boils down to lack of trust. I think I will close with that and leave it to you, Vasily, if you have any questions or.
Yeah, thank you, Theodota. And very well timed. I mean, this opens the floor, I think, to the question I want to ask to Petros Kokkalis. But it's also interesting to see if Greeks are so environmentally, alert and so forth, how they would react to the latest news today that we're going ahead with drilling for liquefied natural gas in the Ionian. Not so much the green transition that the Greek voters hope for. But then, Petro, again, to introduce your speech, if people are wanting green solutions and they care about environmental issues, I think your experience from the latest election was, more disappointing than you were hoping for.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me and thank you for being part of this conversation. Obviously, the last results were disappointing for me. And I think everybody at the Cosmos Party, including our Volt and Pras Nikologia, who were in our ticket, we didn't manage to go over the 1%. Obviously, there were things that were tactical that could have been done better. But I think we didn't manage to break through this green ceiling, to put it that way, the bar you put it, or the green ceiling. That was a very short time and also a very a black wave that came after the green wave of 2019 all over mostly Northern Europe. And less so in Greece, because that's also shown in the elections, in the results of the 2019 European elections in Greece. So all this happened as well. I think that the issue of trust in politics is extremely critical for all political parties in Greece right now. The more so for a space, and not even, we can't even talk about the party, we can talk about the political space, which has, through all these years, has not been able to gain the trust, or when it did gain the trust, hasn't been able to make good on the trust. Either, I mean, it's very clear that even when there was an election that was, there was a breakthrough, then there was a non-election usually. Either because of what Yanis called ill preparation, or to deal with like some issues, or for lack of internal, or for whatever. But that's not really what is critical now. I think that is what is critical now is what is going to happen now. And I am not a fan of the post-materialistic approach to the green politics. I think that we're in a very materialistic time. And I think that the issues that are being handled and trying, and where the Greens have to have solutions, are extremely materialistic, both in the bigger picture, which is, PPMs and plastics in your food and all that, and all, I mean, the planetary boundaries, and also in a very day-to-day life of the citizens. And I think that both the UK Greens, and if we can also put in this company the Democratic Socialists of the United States, Bernie Sanders and Mamdani now, are very materialistic in being laser focused on cost of living, cost of rent, cost of energy, cost of extreme cost of energy, increase extreme cost of food, of transportation, and so on. So I think that instead of doing what we're saying before, a kivia or an obituary here of the past 20 years, it would be much more interesting to talk about a wedding, as we say in Greece, gamos e kivia, we say. How do we... I mean, you know, I can go on about what went wrong, and I think that one... I think I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to do that, but I think that you would have noticed that in the long... in the long list of parties that have run for elections in Greece in the green space, Cosmos is the one party that didn't use the word prasini or ekologia, which has been used, as you have seen, if so, those of you that are Greek speakers, has been used in pretty much every possible combination. So there was a very widespread feeling that this was, let's say, a brand that did not have traction of trust. That proved to be wrong, because there is also Prasino Kinema, which got like 0.7% out of never having been anywhere near, but it was the one ballot in the ballot box that had the name Prasini. So that was wrong. There should have been a Prasino name in the ballot that would have helped a little bit, but probably would not have done the job to get it over 3 or 4 or 5%. Then again, it was a very risky move. It was a very short time. And in this kind of very short times, when you have high risk in a short time, that means there's less time to fix mistakes, and therefore, you know, a high-risk move may be unsuccessful in that. Now, to wrap up in going forward, I think that there is a tremendous need for green policies in Greece, green policies that are expressed in a way that are competitive politically, in the political dialogue, in the public dialogue, and in the electoral space, competitive in the sense of building trust and in the sense of being materialistic. I also believe that the green solutions need to convey the feeling or build the trust or persuade that this is a political group, party, whatever have you, that is able and willing to govern the country, not only as obviously as a part of something or for the moment, but not being shying away, not being defined by what is it anti. It is anti-war, it is anti-globalization, it is anti, what was the other one, anti-PASOK, anti-socialist government. The question here is, what is it for? And I think that is very critical to point out right now. I think that there is space to do that. There has been a lot of water under the mill. There are a lot of very well-structured policy pieces and policy points. And I think that there is an opportunity now with the shattering of the general center-left and center, well, I would say center to Greek political party system. But that would necessitate that there is a green unity to be part of that dialogue. All Greek parties have some kind of climate or green policy or what have you. These are very, 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 very erratic. I'm sure that Thodota will bear witness to the idea that when we first had this government elected, we thought that this is a green government. Even Franz Timmermans came out and said this is the greenest prime minister in Europe. And as we sit here today with a European country that not only opens the month of the COP30 with announcing drilling in the Mediterranean for fossil fuels, and a country that is consistently trying to water down the COP30 message and the 2040 climate goals and so on and so forth. So yes, there is a huge need for that. Also, the left parties or the center-left parties are very uneven, even internally, into what they understand as climate politics, as climate justice, as the idea of the green transition as an opportunity and not a cost, and as the understanding of the class structure of climate justice. So this is a very big opportunity here for all of us in this discussion here and in and digitally to take this a little bit forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor. It's really very useful because it opens up to a couple of questions that I wanted to ask, and I will pass the floor to each of you. But I would want to start with Yosif on this idea that if there is the success of the Green Parties cannot, you know, Green Parties cannot be very successful in a place where the left is very strong because it kind of absorbs. And, you know, you showed also how Syriza Nasbismos was the party to go to pass the threshold. And now if we have this fragmentation and if there is this kind of, you know, what Petros was saying about all this kind of concern, urgency to, or even in Theodora's presentation, urgency to express things about sort of environmental things. Do you see the political landscape allowing the growth if other conditions are met, you know, the handling, the whatever personality or whatever other issues? Do you see the space in Greek politics? For the Green Party?
In a single word, no. The idea of the competition between the left and the Greens is something that comes from the 80s and the 90s. I'm not sure that it's now it does the case, and I would agree that now the Green parties can have more success by being really materialistic. What we're seeing in Greece now is, in my understanding, a Green backlash. I have a question for Theodota and all these nice...
Excuse me.
Opinion polls, Greece saying that they were willing to give 1% of their income for protection of the environment, top of the Europe. So, Theodota, maybe when you come back, could you please tell us what's the percentage of Greeks being members of WWF Greece compared to other European countries? So it doesn't have to give 1% of their income, just giving a membership fee to WWF. Is it top of Europe or we are at the bottom?
Per capita WWF membership.
Yeah. Right. So we're seeing a green backlash. We're seeing the rise of populist parties. Even in parliament, but also in the society, people are questioning climate change. They're questioning renewable energy projects. We are lamenting that the government is drilling for natural gas, but I bet you if you go in Cinema Square tonight and ask people, what do you think of that? Said, of course. Like they said about lignite coal. It's cheap, it's ours, let's exploit it. Let's drill it, let's sell it, let's make money. So, to be honest, I don't see any future for a Green Party in the short term in Greece. Because, as I mentioned, there's a big green backlash on one side. On the other side, you have so many parties, the conservatives, the socialists, the left, who care. Of course they care about the environment. So you have to find, being a small fringe party, a political space that is deeply fragmented, it's very difficult to articulate a distinctive rhetoric that would attract the voters. And keep in mind that you are appealing to such a small segment of voters. So I'm very pessimistic.
Yeah. Sounds like. Okay, can I give sort of the same question but in a different way to Yanis? You said that, I mean, I hung on this phrase, that you never debated openly or the space in openly, integrally, basically the political orientation. At the same time, we say that, oh, it has been very excuse me, post-materialistic and too ideological and not pragmatic. You know, pragmatist on how you govern and so forth. Although I find this a bit contradicting, you know, if you haven't debated too much your ideas, how can you at the same time be too ideological? But maybe the fragmentation explains that. But could we say that there is an opportunity in debating these things? So do you think that the actors, you know, the people in the movement, in the space, have the ability to, so if they only debated the ideological orientation and what is the balance between the materialist and the anti-materialist, to put something forward that would actually mobilize the voters in the direction of the Green?
Well, to do this, we've got to be visible. And to be visible, we need a new push, which can only come from outside. Petros last year could be one
outside push.
Outside push. The Green Wave in 6 years ago could be one. Now we need another one. I can't see which it could be now, but maybe it can. The first of it is this one. The second, since the start of the Greek crisis, we Greek Greens have also been materialistic, and thus has had an appeal. For example, in 2012, one out of four voters considered voting for the Greens. 25%. And the issue with the left from 2006 to 2012 were growing in parallel, in spite of this of front of the left against the Greens. That changed only in the mid 2012. About the marriages, which Petros talked about, no possible spouses available.
No
possible spouses available. There is a very strong sustainability deficit in the Greek left, including when they were somehow allied with Greens.
Okay.
And all these rejections in previous strategies were supposed to create alternatives, alternative to the socialists, alternative to NATO bombings, alternative to globalization. We failed to create these alternatives. That's the point. Not that we opposed these things.
Okay.
I need to be optimistic, but I want to focus on this needed push, to try to find it and be ready to accept it and capitalize on it when it comes.
I thought I rely on you to give the optimistic note. You have a kind of question from Yosef to tell us if this support translates into actually paying money for membership fees for WWF and so forth. But I know also there was a study, I think, by Kappa Research for Heinrich Bell, an institute in Thessaloniki, I think, for the green vote and so forth. And if I'm not, so if I remember correctly, one of the things that were there was that the likely person to vote for the Greens was a voter of MERA, so the Varoufakis party, which shows a particular green, a particular red or left type of voter, so much more militant, I guess, than the average WWF member. Although I don't know the profile of your members, but also this idea that, and I think Yannis referred to it, that you know, if you could vote for two parties, probably a majority or a very big proportion of Greeks would vote for the Greens as a second party, but kind of never as a first party. So can you tell us something about the membership, the intensity of, you know, all the things that you mentioned? Do they really mean it? Do they just say it in questions?
First, trying to answer Yosef's question. It's not the same thing when people say, I am willing to contribute 1% of my income to the solution of the climate crisis. That doesn't equal membership in an organization that can help in mobilizing or changing policies and all that. Also, that doesn't mean that people are willing to vote for a Green Party. It means, though, that they are willing to make a sacrifice if they can trust that the climate crisis can be solved. And that is something we can build on. You can build a debate on this. And it is indicative, it is proof, according to my reading and my readings of that data, that Greeks are actually concerned about the environment, but they are disenchanted, they are disillusioned, they are lost. It's a chaotic public debate out there. And we think that there is a green backlash, but actually in Greece, we don't see it. The problem with Greece is that we only see the social media debates and they magnify hate. This is how social media works and the algorithms and everything. They magnify whoever wants to get out there in the public domain and start cursing, start spreading lies or whatever. And the people that don't, they remain silent. It's like with illegal buildings. We tend to think that everybody owns an illegal building in a forest in Greece. That is absolutely not true. But it is that minority that is more vocal because they have a vested interest to fight for. And the rest, they simply cannot express themselves because there are no official or publicly sanctioned ways of participating and voicing their opinions except the chaotic world of the social media. So what we see is that a constantly growing public is absolutely disenchanted and reaches out to environmental organizations because they are more neutral, they are nonpartisan, and they do not fuel antagonisms and or we try to not fuel negative feelings. Many people come from we wouldn't expect that, but from conservative circles, Christian circles, which is really surprising. I don't know if these people would be willing to vote for a Green Party. I've never asked any of these people, and this is a taboo question for NGOs, yes, because it is a rule that we remain nonpartisan. But you see people from all the entire political spectrum. The only part of the political spectrum that we never touch and is like a red zone for us is the far right. But the rest, there is a growing concern, there is an agony about what is happening out there, especially after Daniel and the repeated disasters and the new normality of uncontrollable mega fires. So they see this as climate change. This is clear. They see the need to protect Greek nature, ecosystems, change policies as a matter of life and death. They don't know who to vote.
Thank you, Theodota. I want to open it to the audience, obviously, for your question. So, Petro, can I ask very for a very quick answer? And yesterday, I was in another event, and Robert Habeck was talking, who's the former federal minister for economic affairs and climate action in Germany, obviously from the Greens, and. He was talking in a business conference in Athens, actually, and he was saying very emphatically, with a lot of passion, that we want industry, we just want green industry. And in Germany, we have achieved to have green industry, but the future of Europe is industry, so we want to industrialize and so forth. And I wonder whether sort of being unapologetically on the does the job kind of thing, and then you can,
Well, I think
that's
that
the solution, that.
I think I mentioned earlier the idea that we have to deframe the propaganda, I would say, the conservative or black or petro propaganda, that there is a cost to climate action. I said before that we have to reframe the green transition as an opportunity, not only as a saving line, but also as a huge economic opportunity, very much like the way Biden put it, that I hear jobs, 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 and it's very clear that Europe is going nowhere with this policy of backlashing, especially the one that is led by the European People's Party and also our government as well, being part of that. The idea of competitiveness. At the same time, we are trying to stop Chinese dumping from Europe. Whereas China, which has managed to have an industrial policy and has been able to dominate all the new economy businesses. They are the first in solar panels, they're the first in wind power, they are the first in automaking, which was like a joke 10 years ago if you sell the Chinese car. And now the European problem is, and the German problem, and the problem Mr. Habeck had, was that Mercedes-Benz and Audi cannot sell cars in China because the Chinese cars are better than the German cars, and they're cheaper than the German cars, and they don't need fossil fuels to run, and they're cheaper to run as well. So this, I think, is a kind of a trap we fall in, very much like the trap we fell in the previous European elections, where we had a huge attack from the European People's Party and a lot of the parties to its right, which are bigger, becoming bigger than the European Party, that with the farmers' protests, that this was a problem of the Green Common Agricultural Policy. Common agricultural policy, which was voted down by the Greens, was rejected by the Green Party, was voted by the same European People's Party with triumphant declarations that this is it, this is the fantastic common agricultural policy, and yet the idea of the backlash was that the problem of the farmers is the Greens. So we are, when you are against this kind of irrationality, let's say, and alternate realities, I think I would stick to the numbers here. Like, so that's maybe not Yanis materialistic, but being very materialistic in that we need to show that the way forward, the smart way forward, that is going to cost less to everybody and is going to make everybody healthier and richer, is green, not black. And that's what we're saying now with the drilling in the GNC. And we are being bombarded by the idea that there's going to be a flood of money in Greece. And this is...
money for everybody.
Money, well, for everybody is something that happens via mechanisms like OPEKEPE or other clientelist networks that work on corruption and political corruption. And this has resulted in Greece has been used 100 billion euro grants since the Common Agricultural Policy, which have resulted in less people living on the villages actually being deserted, has resulted in less land being cultivated, has resulted in less value of agricultural products. And that's 100 billion euro money, not exactly for everyone. So now with the drilling, we have actual agreements signed with these companies, which very clearly state that, as happens in most countries, the possible potentially found fossil fuels is going to be the property of the company. The country is going to receive some kind of royalties, but it's not going to have preferential access to this fossil fuel. So there goes your idea about independence. And you're not going to buy it to any other price than the international price. So there goes your idea of cheap energy or cheap fossil fuel, if that can be said. So we have to fight against this, like gaslighting. There you go with the gas. And against this backlash, which I am afraid to say that we have it in Greece very much as well. Not maybe in the public sphere, but we have a tremendous lack of trust and all this, like... merchants of doubt idea. Yeah, but this is not green, and you don't want to eat meat. And if you don't eat meat, then my brother has a car, and where is this car? Car has the battery, and all this like, you know, litany of, yeah.
Okay, thanks. We need to. I think we covered a lot of them in the discussion, so we may have answered some of your questions, but need to open it to the audience. Please indicate your question. Say very briefly who you are and ask a question, not a statement. I'll start. Mark. Maybe we'll take a couple and then for the whole panel. Yeah. Press the button.
Yeah. Do this.
Yes.
Hello. Hello. I'm Aris. I'm a PhD affiliate here in the Observatory. I would like to go back to 2009. It sounds like a missed opportunity. Even though I was 12 at the time, I could feel like there was a lot of momentum for the party that was representing the Greek movement. From what you know, from what happened at the time, what was the electoral strategy in order to capitalize on that moment? And was the issue an issue of campaigning, personnel? What was it that went wrong, and what learnings were then taken in future campaigns?
I think that's a question probably for Yannis. definitely. Okay, Yannis, please answer that and I will
sum up the question.
You take more questions or
ask no,
more
I want? If you want to ask. Yeah.
Would you sum it up?
So I think, you know, like based on the 2009 result, what was the strategy of the party? And it seemed like it was on a path to capitalize on it and do better and better. So what was the I don't know, the strategy mistakes or any other factors that kind of didn't allow that to happen?
Well, 2009 was an abrupt stop in our dynamics. World polling just below 10%, and then we've got 3.5, and then 2.5 in the national election. And then came the Greek crisis. Our whole agenda was seeming totally irrelevant. We had to work to make it relevant again, to talk about the Green New Deal, combining a solution out of the economic crisis with solution, green responses, for the economy, for the social crisis, and the environmental as well. Connecting all this, we managed to have it work for 2 years, but not more. We didn't go so well in the first 2012 election because there were too much parties and we lost votes, especially in Athens, while rising all over Greece, the rest of the country. And then there was a run-up election, which were totally irrelevant. It was about governing solutions, and we were still talking about green responses to the crisis. So it were irrelevant. It were also technical issues with our campaign. This was the start of sinking.
Would you, can I just say, If in 2010, 11, there was a Green Party in Greece which said, we've been talking about consumerism and over-indebtedness, or, you know, like the consumerist model that feeds into this kind of, that relates also to debt and, fiscal debts, but also current account debts and so forth. And maybe if it took a pro-memorandum stance, would he have lost, of course, a lot of from its left, but gained some of the Christian environmentally concerned members of WWF?
Well, we had already been talking that Greece was building an economy with an expiring day. So this was a credit to us. But also in the start of the Greek crisis, we chose to talk about the privileges of the charge, thus alienating this constituency.
Okay.
But maybe that was a mistake as well.
I'll take a question from there then. Yes, please, first.
Thank you, very, very interesting. I'd like to ask a slightly different question, not about the electorate's attitude towards green policies, but rather the Greek government's attitudes toward green policies. So, one of the key agenda items in any green policy is the reduction in fossil fuel energy and the increase in renewables energy. Now, I understand that there was a point recently that 50% of the total supply into the national Greek grid was 50% from renewable sources. And that was excluding wind power, which has got a huge potential in Greece, apart perhaps from a small project in Alexandroupolis. Now, if the Greek government is successful in implementing these wind policy, because the framework is there. If they're successful, then they will have a serious encroachment into the Green Party domain. So, what would be the future of the Green Party in that case?
Well, I assume this is a question for me, so I'll jump into it because I don't want to let it drop down. I think that the Greek government policy in wind energy has managed to activate a tremendously powerful local resistance movement to wind power. Resistant people are resisting all over Greece, and it's the liveliest part of the green movement, which is paradoxical. You have green people running against renewable energy. Now, I say often that to be against renewable energy because of the way that the Mitsotakis government is applying and delivering it is very much like being against the rule of law because of the way that this government is doing the predator solutions and all this like encroachments of the rule of law. Now, the Greek government has allowed for this big increase of 50%. Up to 50% of the energy mix in the Greek energy mix, precisely by deregulating. It has failed for 7 years to provide a specialized horotaxiko, which has, I don't know how it's called in Greek,
space planning.
Space planning, which was it's a very relevant issue. We are working with the 2004, I think. Special planning, and this is a government which is supposed to be very good and technocratic and hasn't arrived at the point where we have a special planning which respects the two cardinal rules of renewables. The one is the respecting of biodiversity, and the other one is the, and even more important perhaps, the participation of the local communities, of the local people. That has drove people to being against. I mean, these are green people. I mean, the people who know this are like people whom I'm sure that Yanis knows much better than me. And these are people who are protesting very, very vehemently and very much all increasingly harder for us to convince that they are not right in protesting. And if you include into that the fact that this huge increase in the mix of cheaper energy than the one you get from fossil fuels, while this is not in any way reflected in the costs for either the households or the companies or the industry, as evidenced by what Mr. Mytilineos said a couple of days earlier, I don't think they did just a good job. Maybe they did a good job for somebody else, but definitely, okay, the CO2, that's good. I'm not sure that any other government would have done less than that, because the reason that these companies are investing heavily, these are not government investment in wind energy. This is a free-for-all by the government where companies go and install wind power wherever they feel like it. And why do they do that? Because the technology now has reached the point where it's much cheaper to produce a kilowatt from energy from wind or from solar, from fresh sun rather than fossilized sun from so-called natural gas, methane or oil. That's why they do it. And that's why they're making huge money out of it. And that's why nobody else is seeing that sort of money. So that's a good point on the wind energy.
I can come back to that question. Yeah, Jan, you want to?
Well, it looks like a green transition, but it's more a gas transition.
As well.
There is much more based than on gas, and people see they pay more and more for energy. And at the same time, the wind farm industry creates an image like a rail. They can pick every place of public land, establish themselves there. What people don't know and don't see is that it's mostly construction interests and gas interests, controlling even renewables in Greece. The problem is that people do take a stance against what they see. And the green political poll should state what a green transition really is and how much this dominant model costs on the country, but on society. It leads to more energy intensity. And in this way, it undermines competitivity and increases cost of living. That's bad. But we still need to build and to show the alternative, the Greek one. It's difficult, but it's possible. It is necessary. Otherwise, the far right would gain more and more ground against any kind of transition. That's the real danger.
We're running a bit of out of time, but I would like to take the other question, if you don't mind. We can continue over a glass of wine at the end of this event. Yes.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Okay. Theo Ventopoulos, Cardiff University, and also associate here at the Observatory. So in my mind, how I phrase it is more from a comparative perspective, you know, living both in Greece and in this country. And I'm trying to see how Greens are different in Greece and how Greens are here. And in my mind, it's not so different. They seem more successful here because of the system, how it works, the first past the post. You have MPs for many years, Caroline Luke, and recently you had a new MP in Bristol, right? And what this reflects is more of a local dynamics on how specific MPs were close to the communities and they were trying to, they're managing actually to support, you know, the needs and the demands of the local population that are more progressive and also in Bristol. And this is how historically at least Green Party has been. Recently, they changed to Polanski, the new leader, and he came ahead with this new agenda of eco-populism, right? And in combination with the disillusionment of the voters in the UK towards the party, right? Because it doesn't succeed much, as it seems to many other fronts. It seems to work, right? So if I compare this with Greece, would it be the case for eco-populism now, especially now the center-left spectrum of the parliament is, you know, dissected in many parts. Is that something?
Okay, Joseph, do we need an eco-populist?
Well, we had an eco-populist and of the extreme right in the past in Greece. Golden Dawn had a right wing, a green wing, connecting blood and soil and nature and everything. Now they're all in prison. I don't know if an eco-populism agenda could work. Certainly the populist agenda is working. It could, it might, but it will be just guesswork. If I may, I'd just like to just a thought. This discussion, we're talking about what Greens can do and why Greek Greens are not successful. And I think that what's lurking, actually the elephant in the room, is what kind of Green we're talking about. A former professor of mine, Andrew Dobson, wrote in one of his most famous books, Green Political Thought, just because the Queen of England would put lead-free gasoline in her Rolls Royce doesn't make her a Green. So maybe, and that's a thought, we need to think about all these ideas about promoting renewable energy in nice places, not everywhere, and the investing from carbon. Is this exactly what the vision of a Green Party should be in a country and in a planet where the footprint of the economy, of the green economy, is increasing year by year? That's the only alternative the Greek have to offer, that I'm going to have some more wind farms and some more renewable energy and do it better. That's indeed the only option, the only offer we have on the table for the electorate. I personally would not vote for such a party.
I think this is interesting because it reminds me of some discussions I had 30 years ago. But I mean, the question about whether you need to be anti-capitalist in order to be green clashes, of course, with the eco-populism, the success of the Green Party in Germany, and the kind of materialist approach to politics. But let's keep this thought to continue it over a glass of wine. I would like to pass the floor to Theodotas for the last comment. I don't know if you would like to comment something on the renewable energy mini debate that we had a couple of minutes ago, and this kind of the green resistance to green energy in Greece, and any other thought you have on any other questions that were out.
One point I would like to make is that companies, wind energy companies, are on many occasions the worst enemies of green power, of wind power, because they commit crimes. I mean, they don't do their best to construct top or best practice wind parks. In relation to the spatial planning and how they select the places where they will build their wind farms, it's actually not a free-for-all situation in Greece. The restrictions are so many that the so-called free land, where they can ask for permission to construct a wind farm, are just protected areas, Natura 2000. This is unrestricted land. They cannot. No wind farms can be built close to inhabited areas. You need a long distance. Many, many, many areas are restricted due to archaeological or other restrictions. We cannot talk about military restrictions. They are huge and you don't even know them because you don't see them on a map. They are secret. So you just file for a permission to construct a wind farm and you just don't get it, but you wouldn't know about it. So on the one hand, you have very bad practices that correctly, rightly so, fuel reactions. On the other hand, you have a government that absolutely hates, I think, renewables. So it just lets them flourish. Whoever manages to get a permit, that's good. We will celebrate. So indeed, Greece has a growth in renewables, but does not have the grid, does not have the batteries, does not have the system to support this very, very, indeed very cheap energy. So we see it in the prices. We need a green movement, and I'm not just talking about green parties, but about NGOs as well and social movements and everything that will see the real opportunity in producing green that is socially engaging, that is cheap, best practice, and nature safe, and actually demand this as the best solution to the climate crisis and economy.
Okay,
That. And thank you for the invitation.
thank you all for being here. Please join me in thanking all the panelists. I think we definitely didn't answer the question fully. We didn't end up either with a wedding or with a necropsia. But as we were saying earlier, but we opened up, I think, many questions and many aspects of the issue. So if any people in the audience who are thinking about how to start a PhD, I think there's space for another PhD on the green situation in Greece. a number of years later. The Hellenic Observatory continues its events, and I would like to announce also that we have a major keynote lecture next Friday on the 14th of November with the finance minister, Mr. Pierakakis, being in conversation with me about the Greek economy. I may ask him also the renewable energy, but definitely the digital governance and other things. Tickets are out.
Fossil economy.
Sorry?
Fossil economy.
And fossil economy, of course. And you can register online somewhere on our website. Thank you for joining us. Stay in tune for our future events on different topics on Greece and Cyprus as well. Again, a great thanks to our speakers. And those of you who are not online, please join us for a glass of wine, I think. Thank you.